Yes, welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. It's your Thursday night freak show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and as always, my co-host, Nicole Six.
Hello. Welcome to another show of substance without judgment and a good sense of humor from Mark.
Okay, that, I guess that's another slogan. We got so many of them out there. It's going to be a good show. We got two VIPs here, Nicole.
We do.
We're right next to you, to your left. Huffington Post, of all places, said, of the 10 Buddhists you're going to follow on Twitter, this is one of the 10.
Yeah, I think I'm number 10.
He's the author of Hardcore Zen, Sit Down and Shut Up, There Is No God and He's Always With You, and among other books. And I'm glad to have him back on the show. He was one of my first guests, and I really pursued you.
Yeah, I didn't know I was one of your first.
You were in the first couple months. It's Brad Warner.
Hello. Good evening.
Brad is here, and right next to Brad, somebody that I pursued ever since I started the show, and for some reason, she was having sex and having babies. She wasn't able to come on.
But busy.
Another very important person. She was named, I don't know what year this was, but you were named one of the most fascinating people in L.A. by L.A. Weekly. What year was that?
Oh, it was a couple years ago.
Yeah. She is the wonderful, beautiful dancer, and also the woman, the genius behind Devil's Playground, and the genius who said, I'm going to take Star Wars and burlesque and combine them. And now she has Star Girls. It's I haven't seen it in a while. It's so great to see it. And you look fabulous, better than
Thank
ever.
You.
Courtney Cruz.
Hi.
And don't tell your husband I said that. Anyway, before we get started, I have to tell you about our sponsors really quick. Everybody loves doing some cooking. Now, Brad, have you ever been to, you all right?
I'm just clearing my throat.
Oh, good. You ever been to Doobie's Home Cooking, Brad?
I have not.
Courtney, I'm sure you have, right?
I have not.
Neither of you have ever been to Doobie's Home Cooking.
Wait a minute. Doobie's? Yes, I have.
Doobie's
been
Home Cooking.
I was going to say, Brad, are you a vegan?
Yeah, a vegetarian. Yeah, I have been
Buddhist,
there.
I have been there.
It's some of the tastiest vegan food you could never tell it's
indeed.
Vegetarian. And actually, they are having, and this is actually interesting. And if you're in L.A., and we have people listening all over the world, but if you're in L.A., go to Doobie's Home Cooking, or if you're visiting, 1253 Vine Street, Hollywood, California, 90038. These are all vegan. They have Philly cheesesteak. They have fried chicken. The nachos, speaking of L.A. Weekly, is voted one of the best nachos in L.A.
In L.A., wow.
It's all vegan.
And I'm a new vegan, so that's exciting to hear.
Right.
It's a great place to transition. So much of the food just tastes, amazing because it's all made with vegetable proteins the same way you'd have animal proteins.
Right.
In a lot of ways, it's better for you, too, anyway. Less processed.
Right. The creme brulee. Mm. Oh, yeah. You got some desserts for one of your coworkers at the Rainbow. How did go over?
It went well.
Yes. They're having a special thing this Saturday, May 2nd, if you're listening live. Next to Doomies, they have a coffee shop, the Blue Rose, and they're having a launch party for a Cruelty Cutter. Cruelty Cutter is an app everybody's talking about. It was created by the Beagle Freedom Project to help consumers figure out which items were not tested on animals. For products other than food, you simply scan the barcode of the product. Instantly tells you if it was tested on animals or not. And they're having a launch party. And in honor of the launch party, for one day only, a special Cruelty Cutter burger will be available at Doomie's Home Cooking. And vegan desserts and coffee will be available at the Blue Rose, 1253 Vine Street. That's from 7 to 10. Go down there. I'm sure it's going to be a great party. I might check that out myself.
That sounds awesome, yeah. My roommate would probably be really into it. She doesn't use anything that's animal tested.
Right. So, but if you're ever in L.A., you're looking for some good to eat. They've got, I mean, it's ridiculous. They have fried chicken. They have vegan fried chicken. It's amazing. Yeah. So, we're also sponsored by Audible.com.
Oh, boy.
Brad Warner.
I am one of their,
you
authors.
You have two books on there, Sit Down and Shut Up, punk rock documentaries on Buddha, God, Truth, Sex, Death, and Dogen's Treasury of the Right Dharma Eye. Yeah. And then Hardcore Zen, Punk Rock, Monster Movies, and the Truth About Reality, which is a book that I keep loaning to people and never get back.
That's a lot, yeah.
Josie still has my book. This is the second one. This is the second one. So I might have to get an audiobook. So here's how you do it. You go to darkmarkshow.com, www.darkmarkshow.com. You can see our old episodes, including the last time Brad was on YouTube. You can see our subscribe to us on iTunes. Stare at pictures of Nicole. There's one there, and then just click on the Audible button right next to my smiling face. You get a free book, And you could pick one of Brad's
pick
books?
Pick one of mine, yeah. And I'll have There Is No God should be going up soon. We just mastered that one.
Oh, really? So you read these yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome.
And I read that book, and that was a great book, too. So definitely go to audible.com if you're going to dig Brad, and we're going to get to some interesting conversation. Check out his books. Hardcore Zen is a very good introduction. And I do like Sit Down and Shut Up. And I like all his books. They're all good.
Mark's a fan.
Thank you.
And if you're listening live, if you're listening live and you're in Los Angeles, tomorrow I will be performing at the Ha Ha Cafe Comedy Club. All my Valley friends are like, when are you going to be doing the Ha Ha? And I'm doing it tomorrow night. It'll be on Lancashire Boulevard. I don't have the exact address, and I don't want to bog down the show. But if you're in the Valley, you know where the Ha Ha is, and just go check that out. And I'll be performing at 7:30. Anyway, so Brad is here, and I'm going to start with Brad because we're going to start right where we left off last time.
Oh, I don't even remember.
But I know, it's almost 2 years ago. What, you are not a big fan of the Dalai Lama, and what's the problem with the Dalai Lama?
No, I'm not a...
Right.
No, I'm not anti-Dalai Lama. I'm just...
Is it the concept or is it the guy?
No. I think people misconstrued some comments I made as being anti-Dalai Lama. I'm just sort of... when people talk Buddhism, they seem to only think they think the Dalai Lama is everything, and he gets on the cover of all the magazines and everything else. So
he's the pinup.
Yeah. So I just try to kind of comment that there is more beyond the Dalai Lama. Dalai Lama himself seems to be a nice guy.
Right.
He doesn't seem too weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, from what I understand, it's a weird life, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be weird. But, I mean, do you believe in the whole, that they put, all these things in front of
not really. I mean, they have that whole ceremony where they try to find the new incarnation of the Dalai Lama, and they put, the comb and the shaving brush and whatever else the old Dalai Lama owned, and then see if the kid responds to it. That sounds like a bunch of stuff to me, but
right. Well, if you don't know, and I should tell people who you are, because it could say we didn't listen 3 years ago. But Cordy Nicole, we're in a punk rock band, and we're going to hear some of your music later. Zero Defects. You grew up in Ohio.
Yep.
And you moved to Japan. I mean, you went to Africa and all that.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah, I lived a part of my childhood in Nairobi, Kenya, and then. In 1993, I guess I moved to Japan, and that's where I ended up getting ordained. But I actually started studying Buddhism before I went over there.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a Japanese teacher named Gudo Nishijima who thought I should ordain as a priest, which I thought that was a stupid idea. But I kind of trusted his judgment and went for it anyway.
Did he put little things in front of you?
He did not. Yeah, I'm not the incarnation of anybody.
Right.
Probably. I don't know.
Right.
Now, if I could figure out who I was incarnated from.
Well, you're kind of the bad boy of Buddhism.
I guess so. Yeah, people have that impression. I wrote this book called Hardcore Zen.
I love that.
Well, yeah, I wrote this book called Hardcore Zen, which is about punk rock and Buddhism and monster movies. Because at the time I wrote the book, I was working for a company in Japan that made Japanese monster movies.
Ultraman.
So there's a lot. Ultraman, and we were founded by the guy who invented Godzilla, Agent Tsuburaya. So I put that all into a book. This book, Hardcore Zen, and at the time that I wrote it, I thought this book was unpublishable. I just thought I'd written the most unpublishable piece of whatever that I thought maybe
you can swear on the show, by the way.
Yeah. But I will later.
Later, gotta warm up to it.
Yeah, you can't start that shit right away. I wrote this book about punk rock and monster movies and Buddhism, and I thought there was no way anybody'd publish it. I had tried my hand at being a novelist, and I couldn't get any of my novels published.
Right.
So I knew the process by which one submitted a book to publishers, and I did it with this unpublishable Buddhist book, which I thought, this is a laugh. I'm just going to send this off and get rejection notices. And this was the first book I ever got published, was this crazy mishmash of Buddhism and punk rock and Godzilla.
Speaking of that, let me just a sidebar. Why don't you think America could make a good Godzilla movie? Because the last one was, I mean, everybody was telling me, oh, the last one was great, and then I saw it and it sucked. And
yeah, Matthew Broderick,
that's not good either.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that last one sucked, but it wasn't, it could have been better. And I don't know. I think. Well, originally I thought it was because the Roland Emmerich or whoever did the first one, the Matthew Broderick
one.
Those guys didn't understand the concept of Godzilla. They thought he was a big animal, you know. And then they shoot him with missiles and he dies. And Godzilla can't. He's unstoppable. Right. That's the idea. He just keeps coming no matter what you throw at him.
I think we take it too seriously, but not seriously enough. Like, we don't take Godzilla himself seriously. Like, you know, they're terrified of Godzilla, but in a comedic way. Yeah. And we can't seem to master that because we would just shoot it with our guns. Duh.
Well, you know, there's that, and it just... Yeah, I think people have this idea of trying to make it realistic. It's unrealistic to begin with. So right. don't try to make it realistic.
Right.
just have fun with it, you know.
Right. Anyway, speaking of having fun, and speaking of pop culture, Courtney Cruz is the mastermind behind Star Girls. And so we've been friends for a while, but I don't know that much about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up here, actually, in Orange County.
Oh, well, that explains a lot. So, I'm pretty sure the first time I met you, you were doing burlesque at the Bordello Bar, which...
That's where I started Devil's Playground, was at the Bordello Bar.
I have fond memories of Bordello Bar. Tell Nicole and Brad about the Bordello Bar.
Oh, you guys didn't ever go to Bordello? It's now called the One-Eyed Gypsy, I think.
I haven't been there since they changed.
I haven't either, no. But, the Bordello Bar... I guess it opened, 8 years ago?
Something
in this
like
little tiny venue in downtown LA. There was no signs outside or anything.
It looked like an old broken, like a broken down taco shop outside
in
downtown.
Yeah, and it actually, I think, was a Mexican restaurant before became the Bordello.
And the legend was it was a Bordello in the 20s.
Yeah, and that's the history of the actual piece of property was mm-hmm. that it was a Bordello in the 20s. And that's why I heard as a rumor that the owners of the property wouldn't allow the club owner to put Bordello outside on the building. Yes, which is why there was no sign ever. You always had to kind of, it was like a treasure hunt trying to find.
But once you got in, the treasure was there.
absolutely.
It was decorated. It was decorated like you would believe.
Beautifully ornate.
I mean, the
curtain was one of those... like the old vaudeville curtains where it kind of gathered and pulled up.
Those are neat.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And it was this tiny little stage with this ornate wall that had like all this wood carved women and stuff on it.
Absolutely.
And they tore all this down when they refurbished?
No. I think they just kind of changed things a little bit now. Mm. But
that seemed like a waste.
yeah. No, it was beautiful. It was actually built by a set decorator who was really good friends with the people who opened it, which I believe they were the owners of the Brown Derby.
Right.
The people who used to own the Derby.
Brown Derby.
Yeah, so they opened the Bordello, and actually that's where... Devil's Playground, my show, made its debut.
And you were doing Barbie burlesque?
Oh, yeah, man. We did so many themes. It was crazy. Like, I mean, everything from Batman characters to Barbie to sideshow characters.
Right.
I mean, anything you can think of.
First time I had one of your former dancers, Sin Fisted, on.
Yeah.
We were talking about what you do, because there's a lot of burlesque groups out in LA.
And especially now, my God, there's so many burlesque shows.
And most of them are very traditional. They really try to be like the 40s or 50s. Mm-hmm. You have a whole different take on it.
Yeah, you know, I started out that way. I mean, I came from, before I was a burlesque dancer, I was a fetish model. And so I came from a background of very like pretty, posy, you know, kind of look and that pinup kind of thing going on, like the very Betty Page kind of stuff.
So I was
going
to say, you always had the tattoos and the attitude.
And when I was 18, I had the Betty hair and the whole thing. Yeah.
Right.
And I came from that world. I decided to become a burlesque dancer so that, because I wanted to be on stage again. I had grown up doing theater and dance when I was a kid, and I hadn't done it in so many years. So this was kind of like, cool way to parlay my modeling into what I actually like doing, which is live entertainment.
Right.
And not that I didn't like modeling, it was fun, but for me, it's
you like to move.
Yeah, I like, and you know, I like to take on roles and characters, mm-hmm. and so
you like expression.
Yeah, yeah, and I loved doing traditional burlesque. Don't get me wrong, but after like the first couple of years, I just got really bored of it for myself personally, and so I felt like, well, if I'm bored on stage, then my audience is not going to be interested in watching what I'm doing. So. For me, there's nothing worse than seeing a dancer who's not into what she's doing.
I've seen that.
Yeah, and that goes for strip clubs, that goes for pro dancers, that goes for ballerinas, everything. It's any type. If you're not into what you're doing, then you shouldn't be doing it.
And you're
it.
Very comfortable with your body.
Yeah, absolutely. Any chance to get naked, I'm right there.
I'm very comfortable watching that.
Yeah. It's ever since I was a kid. I swear, when I became a nude model and a burlesque dancer, my parents were not surprised at all.
Really?
Yeah, not at all. Like, they, you know, I was very fortunate to grow up in a very open-minded household.
Hippies?
No, my parents were not hippies, actually. It's funny, like, I grew Buddhist? Up until I was about 10 years old in a very conservative household. Yeah. My parents were raised as Jehovah's Witnesses. And so then we were...
That explains a lot.
We were kicked out of the Jehovah's Witnesses when I was 10, thank God.
How do you get kicked out of Jehovah's Witnesses?
Associating with homosexual people.
Oh.
So
oh,
they found out, the church found out that my mother's best friend was a homosexual woman. And so they told her, you know, you have to choose, basically, because as far as Jehovah's Witnesses are concerned, like, you can't do that. Like,
that's interesting.
You will go to hell. You have no place with God if you are homosexual.
You can't even be friends.
You can't even be associated with them because it means you accept their lifestyle.
Interesting. I had no
idea. And so, you know, my parents were kicked out and they were fine with that. Like, they had just both been raised, I guess, you know, all the way through their childhood. And so it was just kind of the norm to them.
A lot of people.
Yeah. And it was great because we ended up being introduced to a lot of different religion types. You know, my parents kind of tested out different stuff after that.
A lot of different homosexuals?
Yeah. Actually, my mother came out a couple years later.
Good.
My mom was a lesbian, so.
That really wouldn't have worked with the Jehovah's Witnesses.
They would not have been happy about that at all. You know, like any man would who was married to a woman for almost 30 years. I mean, it was a little rough on him, but.
Was it a surprise?
Not to me, it wasn't. Right. My mom always kind of had, you know, a little bit of a, you could tell, like, she wasn't a super, she wasn't like a super lipstick pretty super softy mom, you know? She was a little
she's
more
not like you are now.
Yeah, well, and I wasn't either. I grew up, I was a tomboy, you know. I did gymnastics growing up, and
I was gonna say, do you have the same rap that every beautiful woman has? You know, I was in high school, no guys liked me, I was all skinny, and they weren't interested in me.
I should send you pictures, Mark. I had, like, acne, the unibrow. And plus, I grew up in Costa Mesa, so, like, everyone was tan and blonde, and I was dark-haired and freckled and fair-skinned, so I grew up...
Well, then in that case, please send me pictures.
So people, you know, I didn't have a lot of... I was kind of the local weirdo in Costa Mesa, you know.
Right. And the weird thing, so since we talked to Brad... The Bad Boy of Buddhism. There was a movie about your life.
Oh yeah, there was. There was a documentary called Brad Warner's Hardcore Zen.
Hardcore Zen. Yeah. And I'm gonna show a picture.
Oh, you got pictures.
Well, the picture of the covers is interesting because it's you in a bunny outfit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
the audience sees that. It's on the screen over there, but. So how did that work out?
First
off, that's not very hardcore, let's be honest.
Well, I got a leather jacket on over it.
Oh, so, excuse me.
No, the
you're Bugs Ramon.
I was like yin and yang,
I was talking to the director, Piruz Kalea, and we're just kind of brainstorming what to do next, and I said, I thought it would be funny if I went out in a gorilla outfit and just started talking about Buddhist philosophy and never mentioned that I happen to be in a gorilla costume, just to see what that would be like. And I just said this as a joke. I was joking with him the whole time because we became really good friends after a while. And like a week later, we're getting ready for a shoot, and he says, well, I couldn't get a gorilla costume, but I got you this. And he pulls out this bunny rabbit outfit. Yeah, I didn't think he would... I just said this off the cuff. I didn't think he would take it seriously. So that's what we did. I put on the Easter bunny costume with a leather jacket on, and we found this kind of hill which I guess you can't film on anymore, but there's this hill where you could see, it's in like Echo Park, and you can see downtown L.A. if you stand right on the right spot.
Oh, it's probably the one they filmed that Michael Douglas movie where he's
A bunch of famous films have been done there. And we just, and I just stood there and I just talked about Buddhist practice and different things like that and never acknowledged that I was
So these were little vignettes within the movie.
And we stuck them in here and there in the film.
So all these things seem to happen to you. Now, you've been practicing Buddhism and your teacher's like, well, I want you to ordain as a monk. You didn't figure that. You didn't figure that the book would be, would get any traction, and it did.
Yeah, it's all been weird.
And then somebody comes to you, and we have Peruse on the show. He's a great guy. He comes to you, I want to make a movie about your life. What are you thinking then?
Well, when I first put out the Hardcore Zen, which came out in end of 2003, so really 2004, actually, when people started seeing it. Almost immediately, within like 6 months, a guy contacted me wanting to do a movie, like a narrative film based on the book. And I got all excited. I was living in Japan at the time. I flew to LA, met the guy, talked to him, and he hyped me up. Right. And then after, months and months and months, nothing is happening. A year later, nothing is happening. And I'm not hearing from him anymore. And it's just gone cold. And this same scenario played out about three other times.
Wow.
So I think Peruse was number four who came to me talking about a movie. And I just told him, I kind of halfway blew him off. I just said, well, because he was talking about a documentary, and I gave him a list of places I was going to be talking, and I said, if you want to send some people out to shoot one of my talks, go ahead. Here's the list. And I thought, this is the last I'll hear from this guy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, 3 weeks later, I was in New York City, and he said, we've got the film crew, we're ready to go. And I said, okay. Right. And he started filming it. So I was really impressed because he just started doing this movie instead of these other people I'd been involved with were talking it to death and never did anything.
Right,
he hardly talked at all. He just got the film crew out there and started shooting.
And speaking of documentaries, I was reading on your blog, hardcorezen.info, which I recommend everybody check out.
Well, thank you.
Periodically, but you were talking about the Scientology documentary.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was going to ask you about it. What was interesting to me, I had a different take than everybody else. Everybody else was like, oh, these guys are crazy, they're wacko. And I sort of,
that's just kind of how everybody feel about knows. All religions.
That was my point. That was my point. But what was interesting about the documentary is the first third kind of, there were two things that were interesting is that they had actually told more of the story of L. Ron Hubbard, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
And also told what people get out of it and what drew them in. So I had no idea. I just hear people like, oh, they're nuts. They're, And are they more nuts than any other?
I don't think so. I think if you poke into any religion's backstory, it sounds fairly crazy. I mean, there's this, I don't know, the whole Xenu, the galactic emperor and all that stuff. That's pretty...
Well, you worked on that movie in Japan, so I'm sure.
So that's pretty out there, but really there's a lot of stuff that's... But people don't go into Scientology because they hear about Xenu, the space warrior, and the DC-10s that are dropping people's souls into volcanoes and all that stuff, and they go, oh, that's for me. They get in because they want some kind of fellowship and they want people... I think a lot of people are interested in these sort of deeper questions about the meaning of life, and if they can hang out with people who are also interested in that, that's very attractive to them. And some people don't even care about that. They
and
just
that's
want
why
community.
People hang out with you and come to your.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
We try
books
to
and
we try
and
to do
to your,
something.
Yeah.
Well, and like Buddhism, all religion is mostly about all core belief systems. It's not even just religion. You could just believe in science. You could believe in nothing else. It's about having a sense of balance, something that helps you better yourself, something that helps you grow as a person, and people find that in different ways.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And by the way, that was the moment of intelligence on Dark March. We try to have one every show.
That's good.
But people do find that, and that's what I found when I started meditating and started going to Buddhism and reading up on it and following it. But you made a great point in your column, and then you compared what Buddhism does to you to what it likely does to John Travolta and other Scientologists.
Boy, I don't remember what I said.
Okay, well, what you said was you think that John Travolta gets something out of Scientology, pretty similar to what you get out of Buddhism, but the people at Scientology, basically it's a means to an end, and they become rich assholes, and you're trying to find.
Well, yeah, there is that. I can't remember what I wrote, but you know, I think people are searching for something, and people will have all sorts of ways. If I didn't think the path that I was on was substantially better than others, I wouldn't be in it. So I don't want to play that. But I also think there's different ways for different people. So what's best for me may not be best for everyone.
Although in some of your writings, you've some people that are doing non-Zen Buddhism, or some people that you may have, you're a controversial figure. They don't call you I'm the only one that's called you this so far. They don't call you the bad boy of Buddha for nothing.
And I got called that in like a Finnish newspaper or something. No, it was Irish. It was in Northern Ireland. It was Brad Warner, the bad boy of Buddhism.
I bet they admired it, though. It's Ireland.
Yeah, it was.
But you've been critical, and you use dirty words to
Well, I've been critical of some of the people who've abused. I think you can abuse Buddhism and meditation, and you know, it's become a kind of a commercial thing. You know, people have realized you can make money off of it. Right. I haven't realized how to make money off of what I do, but
your blog makes more money than your books.
My blog makes more money than you read that. Yeah, that's so when I did my taxes this year, I realized that my blog had brought in about four times as much as any of my books, which I was really shocked.
Wow.
By. Which is to say that my books don't bring in very much.
Right. Well,
but you should go buy them and help me out.
You really should. Or go to audible.com, help me out, and help Brad out. But talk about somebody who's hit on something that's very successful is Courtney. Where did you get the idea to combine Star Wars and burlesque?
Yeah, I want to know that.
Well, you know, it wasn't the first kind of combo along that genre. You know, we had done the Batman combo with burlesque when the Dark Knight movie came out.
Do you have the one with you with the Joker? You got to see this. This is hot. You can show that to the cameras right here. Look at that. That's the cover of your husband's. What is that? A record? Single?
Yeah, it's a vinyl. Yeah,
vinyl. I've explained it to the kids on other shows, but that's a record. But look at that. That's a hot Joker.
Bang!
I'll be your Harley Quinn.
So yeah, that was actually my first kind of delve into taking burlesque from the traditional sense of what everybody recognizes burlesque to be in modern day, and it was kind of the first like mashup I did was the Batman stuff, and then after that I actually did video game characters.
Right.
I did Samus Aran from Metroid and built the full suit. Of armor and the arm cannon and everything.
I don't play video games.
That's actually a hot idea. Because she's a chick underneath a giant suit.
It's a giant, like, armor, like these big shoulder globes and a helmet and, like, full armor head to toe. And actually, you don't know that she's a girl until the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So
underneath this big, clunky, you know, mecha suit is a really hot chick.
And G4 TV had actually taken a poll for me when I decided to do video game characters as burlesque dancers. And I said, you know, can you just ask like G4 viewers, like what are the top, you know, 50 video game characters of all time that they would want to see stripped down? Metroid, it was number one. So I was like, whoa, that's what I'm going to do then.
Lara Croft is so passe.
She was actually like number 10, I think.
Yeah. She's pretty hot.
Yeah. And she was in the show too.
Melina's always really up there.
And so, we did video game characters, and then I grew up on comic books, video games. And so that's why I really decided to kind of mesh the two is I love doing character stuff. Right. And then the Star Wars thing, it was because there's so many great characters and costuming possibilities are like phenomenal for a burlesque dancer to have so many pieces to remove. And taking something that no one had ever added to the burlesque world, I thought was...
Why do you think Star Wars has endured? Because I got to be honest with you, and people may be shutting off the show right now, but I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. I like it. It's okay.
Blasphemy.
It's okay, but I'm not saying I don't think it's that great.
You know, I actually met somebody. Was that today? Yeah, I was actually. I had to buy new cars. My car was breaking down, so I was talking to the guy who was selling me the car, and he was like, "No, I'm not really a big Star Wars fan. I was like,
I'm a huge
what year
Star
were
Wars
you born?
Fan.
He said 1984. I was like, oh, okay, no worries. But I grew up on that stuff, you know.
I did too, but I don't know. I just didn't hit me like it did everybody
strike
else.
A chord with you.
That's kind of how it is. Like, I mean, I've read all the books. If you like it, you like it, and if not, it's just a good movie.
The Cole's a youngin' too, and you love it.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm 85, so. Yeah, of course I read the books. Wow. Han Solo was a badass.
You played the video games? You've done the...
Yeah, I'm not as much into the video games, but I would watch my cousins play the video games. So whenever I like a game, but I don't personally
want to
play it.
Are you a big Star Wars fan?
I'm more of a Star Trek fan. You know.
Oh. Trekkie, my dad's a Trekkie.
I like Star Trek,
I grew
too.
Up with Trekkie, too, yeah.
I'm not big on Star Trek either. I don't get it. I don't know.
We actually did. There was a great show that we did.
Original or Next Generation?
Star Wars versus
original
Star Trek.
Original one. Okay. You did a Star Trek burlesque?
We did. We actually were doing wrestling shows, all-female wrestling shows for a while. Yeah, it was Star Wars versus Star Trek.
All right.
So it was called Star Wrestling Wars. That was really fun.
So what character were you
Captain
and who
Kirk's
were you wrestling?
Gonna lose his gun
I actually
and punch
was
someone.
Spock in that one, and I wrestled Darth Vader. It was killer, man. It was really funny. The way it was set up was like celebrity death match. So I would film the girls on green screen, and we would put them in these little funny, and they were like the trash talk
videos.
Sounds
great.
And that was their intros, and then each character would come out solo and do their striptease down to their bikini.
Come on,
did you have Spock talking trash?
I gotta hear this.
Yeah, how did they do that?
What did I say? I can't even remember now. It's on my YouTube. I don't know. This was like 5 years ago.
It's not logical that you would beat me. I mean, I don't get
it. No, it was like, how did it go? You want me to remember all my lines from this from like five years ago?
You can just sort of wing it, but I'm just trying to get a sense of the Spock trash-talking voice.
It was totally like the regular Spock voice.
Spock, I'm going to kill you. I get to talk later.
No, you stay in character, you know. Spock speaks very, like, kind of monotone, and there's no emotion involved at all. And there's eye contact, but no emotion, and the face doesn't change, really.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But it was quite a funny show. I wrestled Darth Vader. Darth Vader's shtick was fucking hilarious. It was one of the best trash-talk videos we ever filmed. You'd hear us laughing in the background, like totally low budget, you know.
And
like,
you'd rip off the Darth Vader, all the clothes and stuff.
What would happen is the videos were like the intros, you know, just like a wrestler, just like WWE, where they have these videos that play, and then the guy makes his entrance, you know. And so each girl would like make her entrance, and she would do her burlesque striptease on the stage down to a bikini, and then her opponent, we would play her opponent's video, and then her opponent would come on and do her striptease.
So they don't rip each other's clothes off.
Then they would end up in the wrestling ring for a third song. And it was full contact wrestling.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it wasn't like cat fighting, like pulling each other's hair or wrestling, like body slams.
Anybody get hurt?
Chokeholds. You know, actually, I'm fortunate I didn't get hurt. I actually wrestled Sin. I wrestled her as Venom. I was Joker.
And she would be so
strong.
She
was Venom, yeah. And we had this great choreographed routine that we did where she actually picked me up by my throat and chokeslammed me. And
she's strong.
Yeah, and little did we know that I was pregnant at the time.
Oh.
So fortunately, my strong-ass baby survived two wrestling matches, actually.
Wow. Really?
Before I knew I was pregnant, I had wrestled twice, yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, crazy coincidence.
He's a gigantic monster baby.
That's what the next episode of Jane the Virgin is actually about.
Is it really?
Pregnant wrestling with chicks.
Pregnant wrestling with chicks.
I don't watch that show, but I saw a commercial for that.
That's the first Jane the Virgin reference that's been on the dark
show,
market.
But that was the first thing I thought of.
I don't even know.
Because I was like, pregnant chicks don't wrestle. Shows me.
That's funny. Yeah, well, you know, people asked me when I was pregnant if I was going to still perform as a burlesque dancer, and I said I was not about to inflict that gigantic belly that I had on anybody. Someone offered to paint it as the Death Star.
But you did because you're
I did, yeah.
Cover.
No, I my
if we can
my
show
husband,
that other picture.
My husband asked me to shoot for his album cover that he had titled Spawn of the Psycho.
That makes sense.
Right. And, now, who's the psycho? Him or you?
He is. Actually, the baby is.
My
husband.
I know the baby's a spawn, but which one is a psycho?
My husband. I think we're both a little psycho, honestly. Right. Yeah. You know, he had asked me.
I think it's much better than Kim Kardashian's.
Thank you.
Demi Moore's got nothing on that.
You should show the audience, though. They have no idea what
that's talking about.
It was cool because, you know, I did some pregnancy photos, like some pretty stuff. And then my husband was like, you know, because the whole thing with Psycho Charger is they're like a horror rock band, you know.
Right.
And they do a lot of movie soundtrack, like horror movie soundtrack stuff and real grindy. Anyway, he said, you know, I want to do an album cover that that will get us in trouble. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm always game for that. Right. So what was your idea? Yes. And he said, well, I want to just be an image of you completely naked, you know, 8 months pregnant, covered in just blood, and that's it. And he said, I'm not even going to put a title on the front of the album or anything. I just want the image to speak loudly. And it spoke loudly. It got banned.
got banned from the 3 record stores that are left in the United States.
Well, obviously, there's a censored version on iTunes and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, it got banned from iTunes.
Oh, yeah. No, they censored it right away. They were like, you can't put that artwork up here.
Speaking of music, and when we call Brad Warner the punk Buddhist, we're not kidding around, because you are a bass player in a punk band.
That's right. Zero Defects.
Zero Defects. And we're actually going to listen to a little Zero Defects right now.
Okay.
All right. This is Brad Warner, Zen Master, going punk.
If you have to be non-violent, how do you handle that? Do you just sort of stand there and let the violence happen around you?
You're on the outside, make sure everybody's good. So how do you reconcile the wild craziness of punk rock with the quiet serenity of Zen?
Yeah, the strain of punk rock that I was involved in most was this kind of Washington D.C. Minor Threat influence stuff, which had a very strong sort of moral component to it. Of you know, there was this nonviolence, and there was this idea of political action and awareness and social, you know, all this stuff. So I felt like a lot of the punk rock movement was doing a lot of the same things as what the Buddhists were doing. Mm-hmm. So to me, there always seemed to be a strong connection. But for a long time, I thought I was the only one who ever felt that. That's why I felt this book, you know, the Hardcore Zen, would be unpublishable. Right. And I found out actually a lot of people had noticed that connection.
Well, I think one of the people noticed, and by the way, Courtney just took off her shirt, so I don't know.
I noticed that.
I noticed that too. I think she's ready to wrestle somebody. But one of the people that apparently noticed, because he did a forward to your book and was featured in Hardcore Zen, was Randy Blythe from Lamb
of God.
Oh,
that's right. Yeah, that's right.
How did he, I mean, first off, quiet and serene does not describe Lamb of God's music.
No, that's for sure, yeah.
He's a Buddhist and he meditates.
Yeah, he is, and he I don't know if he considers himself a Buddhist, but he definitely meditates. And he just contacted me out of the blue one day. I had heard of Lamb of God, but I wasn't really a follower of their stuff. And he wrote me an email or something and said he really liked Hardcore Zen and could we meet sometime. And it took a while for us to get together, but we actually ended up becoming friends. And he's I did a blurb for his. He's coming out with a book sometime later this year about that whole, I don't know if you heard about this incident where he was in the Czech Republic and they were accusing him of manslaughter because somebody had jumped on stage and then fallen off and then died.
Yeah. That's a pit you don't want to go in, Nicole.
Yeah. I mean, the pits for Lamb of God must be pretty rough.
I've seen them. Yeah. I've been to a couple of their shows. I don't go in them.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Yeah. He's invited me to some of their shows, and I've gone backstage, you know, a couple of times and watched from there, which was really interesting to see it, because Zero Defects played music that was kind of, as you can tell, a little bit similar to that, but we never got that big, you know. And it's amazing to see them in San Bernardino playing Ozfest or whatever, you know, these things that
I was there. Yeah, I was there when they played Ozfest.
Yeah, I was backstage then.
Oh, okay,
so we were both there.
Right.
But that was a trip to see that. And he's into it, and I think he like me, he saw the connection between the sort of punk ethos of this kind of ethical punk thing as being similar to what he was doing. And he's also, you know, he's also into the, he was a heavy drinker, and there's some videos out. There's a really embarrassing video of him being drunk, and he's off that stuff, and he's now kind of straight edge these days too. So that ties in with it as well.
Right. So, and also Nina Hartley.
Yeah, yeah.
The adult film star is somebody.
Well, yeah, the connection with me and Nina Hartley was that I was dating this girl, and she, as kind of a gift, she gave me Nina Hartley's Guide to Fantastic Sex. And I'm like, oh, why are you giving me Nina Hartley's Guide to... And she says, no.
Well, there's a reason, Brad.
No, she says, look on the acknowledgements page. And I opened it up, and there's a few names I don't recognize, followed by about five different people's names I recognize from San Francisco Zen Center, like people at San Francisco Zen Center. And it turns out that Nina Hartley's parents were monks at San Francisco Zen Center, both of them. And she had grown up in that in Tassajara, which is their monastery up in Northern California.
Right.
So I was writing for Suicide Girls at the time, and I pitched them the idea of me doing an interview with Nina Hartley, and they made the connections. And then I started talking to her about, she was married in a Zen Buddhist wedding ceremony.
Okay.
In which you take a vow to uphold the 10 Buddhist precepts, and the third one in there, number three, is do not misuse sexuality. So my lead in for the interview was, how do you feel you're upholding the third Buddhist precept of not misusing sexuality?
Right.
And she does, and I put her in my book, Sex, Sin, and Zen, because I thought that was a really good example of this precept of not misusing sexuality is deliberately vague. You know, the early Buddhists actually spelled out what misusing sexuality was, the early Indian Buddhists 2,500 years ago.
Right.
But they quickly found out that as they moved into other cultures and things changed, that this thing that they'd written wasn't working.
Right.
So they just went to a very vague thing, said, don't misuse it.
Right, because she gave me a hand job right over there when I was on the Ginger Lynch show.
And was it misuse?
It was not misuse. No, it was very, she's very well used. And she ate Ginger Lynn out over here. That wasn't a misuse either, but...
I haven't seen any of that. I've just been kind of me and her talking.
Right. I've seen a whole different side. We should get Nina Hartley on the show.
She'd be interesting.
Are you still writing?
Have me with Nina Hartley.
Well,
that's
absolutely, yeah.
That would be fun.
Are you still writing for Suicide Girls?
I haven't written anything for them for a while, so...
Because that got you in trouble.
Well, people were upset by that, and I thought... My take on it was when they approached me to do this, and I thought, well, if I say no, then there's no Buddhist philosophy on Suicide Girls. And if I say yes, there
is. I think
it would be interesting. And they gave me a free subscription to the site, so that was
there you go. Now we get the truth.
But
speaking of the Buddhist precepts, because I read something today. And this is when you had your book, Sex, Zen. What did
Sex, Sin, and Zen.
Sex, Sin, and Zen.
It was going to be called Sin, Sex, Sex, and Zen, but they... Yeah.
Sin, Sex, and Zen, which I read and I really enjoyed. Actually, that's another book I loaned to somebody. I loaned to my friend who's a swinger, and I haven't gotten that back yet. So apparently that's sitting there with Nina Hartley's How to Have Better Sex. But
probably, yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. They're meditating and doing all sorts of tantric things. But there was a review, and they were, or there was something... They had, one of the Buddhist precepts is not to criticize.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And somebody took you to task because in some of your columns you criticized.
I was criticizing, yeah.
Yeah, you criticized, specifically there was somebody that was a former student of yours you called an asswipe.
Oh. Yeah, I did that once, yeah.
I can see how.
But should you have put that in print?
Probably not. That was. But the thing was.
Well, we all make mistakes, and we're all trying to live up to it. Yeah.
The thing with that particular person was I'd written it in on a blog post, and I'd written it in such a vague way that there was no way anybody would have any idea who I was talking about. And then he went on the column on the comment section and identified himself as the person. I'm like,
what an asswipe!
Yeah. I didn't say anything that would have identified you. Until you had to come out and do that,
but you've also been critical. Who's the guy the older monk that's a big deal now?
Oh, Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thich Nhat Hanh. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yeah,
you were very critical of him.
I haven't been that critical of Thich Nhat Hanh. I he seems like a decent guy. The guy I've been most critical is a guy named Gyenpo Roshi, who is a guy who invented this. this thing called Big Mind, which is supposed to get you a Buddhist enlightenment experience in like an hour. You know, this is something people train for decades, and he's saying he can give it to you in an hour, and it's just a scam. But a lot of people are falling for it. And he was charging $50,000 for this, no joke.
Wow.
You know, and people were paying it. Yeah, people were paying it. I just couldn't believe that. No, it's amazing.
There's a lot. I mean, you know, people are always trying to find enlightenment. I remember I don't know, the movie A Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Kevin one. Kline's character is based on a guy who apparently in the 80s sold this thing, Buddha for Power.
Oh, God. Really?
And John Lee said that's how he based that character on it.
Wow.
But anyways,
I did not know that.
Yeah, so that's why he kept misquoting Buddhist principles.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to watch that again.
Right. But Courtney, so now, you did not dance while you were pregnant.
No.
But I did see your triumphant return. I think I was there when you did Star Girls, when the first show back when you were pregnant.
Yeah.
After you were pregnant. I mean, you had the kid. And
yeah,
the kid's
I had
fine.
The baby. I took a few months off. And, you know, I think I returned to the stage like 6 months.
And you look as ravishing as ever, if not better.
Thank you so much.
So in Star Girls, you play Stormtrooper?
I am. Yeah, I'm the Stormtrooper.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you have the whole Stormtrooper outfit.
Yeah, I built it on my dining room table.
You built it yourself?
I do, yeah. I learned costuming and set fabrication and prop fabrication. I'm a very hands-on.
I'm not
a girly girl like burlesque dancer. Like, oh, I just show up and do my thing. No, since I'm a producer of the show, I'm the person who shows up at noon with the trailer full of props and lighting and all.
Well,
and
that stuff. Also gives you more expression, more power over the expression.
Yeah, I like to be at the end of it, be able to go, I made this. Yeah. Now what do you think?
And these shows are not just empty burlesque. The dancers come out and then somebody sweeps up the clothes after them.
No.
There's a whole set. There's video screens.
Yeah, there's...
It's a whole thing.
It's, you know, specific projections for each character. We have props that people come out of. There's, I mean, the whole... It's a
show.
It's a very highly produced show for it.
Didn't you get in trouble with George Lucas?
That's what
I did, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Okay, so the story is that 5 years ago... we did the first show at the Bordello, and the image of me as the Stormtrooper went viral on the internet. And
as it should.
It's a great image.
No,
yeah.
No, I know. I've looked at that for countless hours.
It's one of those magical moments, you know.
I did a lot of research on you.
Extensive hands-on.
I looked at that, you, the Stormtrooper. I have a new appreciation for Star Wars now.
Yeah, I mean, it ended up literally within a matter of like 48 hours on thousands of websites. And I mean, Howard Stern was talking about it. It was on Boing Boing. It was on TMZ. It was everywhere.
Right.
And so obviously we had already been planning to do the show again because we were at Bordello, which was like a 200-person venue.
Right.
And I turned away like 600 people that night. So I was like, okay, got to move it, first thing. And secondly, let's do it again, obviously. So we moved it from the smallest venue in L.A. to the largest.
The Henry Fonda Theater.
Which is the Henry Fonda Theater.
Oh, that's major.
Yeah, we sold it out 2 nights in a row in 2 days.
Well done.
Yeah, tickets went on sale. They were gone. And, you know, a huge company, Live Nation, hit me up and said, you know, we want to tour you guys and we're going to send you around. You're going to do all the house blueses all over the country.
Oh.
So you're like... Yay, we win.
Yeah.
And then
the force
2 days.
Is with you.
Yeah. You think the force is with you. And then the force comes and fucks you right up the ass instead.
Oh, dear.
With no lube. So basically, what happened was, you know, I wasn't familiar with like parody guidelines. And even though burlesque is considered parody, there's guidelines that you have to follow. And so. You know, when I did the original show, I wasn't aware that it was going to happen. You know, and so we just kind of did whatever we wanted.
Barbie never came after you.
No, Barbie never came after me at all. Nobody else ever
wrestling,
came after me.
The Star Trek.
No, nobody did. Just Lucas. And what happened was, you know, because it was a viral situation, literally, if you typed in the two words Star Wars on Google, we were the third thing that came up. So, and it's because of what, you know, when something like that happens, when, you know, a story goes viral and has millions of clicks, you know, and people are sharing the story on their blogs and it's da 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 da. So yeah, I got an email from them, and my PR lady actually used to work for them, and so she hit them up and said, you know, what's the problem? And they said, well, you know, she's completely infringing on our copyright. And she said, no, burlesque is parody. And they were like, yeah, no. So I basically was given the okay to do the show at the Music Box Theater, but mm-hmm. then they said that they didn't want to see it in that format ever again. And so I went and I consulted with a parody lawyer.
Right.
And I had to make major changes to yeah. the title of the show, to characters.
Which is Star Girls.
Yeah, which you know, it was originally called Star Wars Burlesque.
Oh, right.
And now it's called Star Girls, okay. which is parody.
And it's ever evolving. So May 1st is the next one.
May 2nd, yeah.
May 2nd, I'm sorry, May 2nd.
Saturday, May 2nd.
Saturday, May 2nd. I'm definitely, you're not working Saturday. Maybe I'll have to take you down there.
It's if fun. You guys want to go, just let me know. If you want to come out too, I'll put you on the list.
No, I'm definitely going.
Yeah, where is it? It's at the Dragonfly.
The Dragonfly is in
punk
Hollywood.
Rock home. Yeah.
It's in Hollywood on Santa Monica
and Wilcox.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've been performing there since my first burlesque dancing like 15 years ago. It's where Miss Kitty's is. It's like
I saw Miss Kennedy last
Point Break Live is there. There's a lot of
goth clubs, Helter Skelter. So what? When we go May 2nd, and please put me on the list plus one.
Absolutely.
But we go on May 2nd, what are we going to see?
We have 12 performers that night. I can't name character names because that's...
Oh, is that part of the...
Yeah, that's part of the parody guidelines.
Who are the dancers?
Performers that you'll see. I mean, I have such a great variety in performers, and we have pole dancers, we have contortionists, ballet dancers, girls who are... I have a new girl who's she's a ballet contortionist hip-hop belly dancer.
Really? Is she single?
Yeah. I believe she is, yeah.
Well,
yeah, she's amazing.
Well, like, forget the plus one, I'll be there.
she's one of the new characters that we just added recently.
Okay,
so.
Great. And so they pack it in. It's a great show. As I said, they have a whole set. It's a whole big
design. Yeah, and there's an art show that happens as well. So there's all this artwork that's inspired by Star Wars and the Star Girls. And it's a breast cancer charity event.
That's
so
great.
For 5 years, we've been working with the Busted Foundation and helping raise funds for local women.
Oh, that's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the force is with your breasts.
Yeah.
Hey, the boobs got to help the boobs.
I appreciate that. Yeah. No, I've been to Star Girl shows. Trust me, it's I like it better than Star Wars. I am never bored. It's way better than the sequels. I'll tell you that. Have you ever had a Jar Jar Binks?
No, we haven't. But, you know, we're doing a sequel show. You know, the new movie's coming out, obviously, in December. And we're going to be...
working on that lightsaber, the cross lightsaber.
Oh, wait. Just wait. Wait till you come to the show next week. There's a crazy lightsaber thing that happens that's going to be debuted with Darth Vader. So you're going to love that.
Right. And
with are you going to be... Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I said the the character. You have to bleep that out.
Darth Vader.
Dark Lord. I think is what we call her.
Are you gonna be a stormtrooper? Or are you gonna do an
appearance? Yeah. No, I'm always the stormtrooper in the show. But we are doing a sequel. So we've got Star Girls, which is the original. Mm-hmm. And we call it the Vampire Strikes. It's Star Girls, the Vampire Strikes Back.
Good.
And then our sequel is going to be coming out the beginning of next year. Right. It's called Star Girls, The Farce is a Shaken. And it'll have all new characters in it.
Return of the Pasty, is that coming?
Return of the Pasty.
Nicole's got a quick question.
Yes.
Has Disney approached you at all? Because Disney does not like when, after Disney bought Marvel, certain artists who are making Marvel art were no longer allowed to sell them.
Yeah, Disney has not approached me thus far, but I also am very strict about falling under parody guidelines. I use a disclaimer that shows that we are not involved at all with them in any way, shape, or form.
So you've learned from your mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I was young and I just didn't know any better at that time. And so now I've learned what parody is and what is considered parody. And so that's...
So if we want to know more and see more of the shows, not just the Star Wars, but Star Girls.
Yeah, any of the...
Star Girls or whatever shows you have. CourtneyCruz.com.
CourtneyCruz.com, yep. Or you can find us on Facebook, which is Devil's Playground.
I do recommend CourtneyCruz.com. I spent hours and hours researching
Thank you.
Courtney Cruz for the show. And Brad Warner, if you go to Heart... Does somebody have hardcorezen.com?
Yeah, unfortunately.
And hardcorezen.net.
Yeah, we're actually doing something about hardcorezen.net, but yeah, hardcorezen.info is what we are.
Right, I got that. I just was wondering how you get to info. It's a long way down.
Yeah,
hardcorezen.tv, I'm sure is still going.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know.
But if you want to read interesting, insightful things, and you have a retreat this weekend.
That's right, up in Mount Baldy. So that's where I'm going this weekend, to go stare at walls for 2-3 days.
And just real quick, you have 2 meditation classes every week?
Yeah, one in Silver Lake on Mondays and one in Culver City on Saturdays. And those are both listed at hardcorezen.info with the addresses and all that.
Okay, and NicoleSix.com. You read some scary stories. She does have some horror novellas on there. And gothcomedian.com, and come to the Ha Ha Cafe tomorrow in NoHo, and go to Star Girls next week. I think we're all on the list. Yeah. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye.